Hi, this is Rebecca Wirthrock of the Agile Alliance, and I'm here with Dane Weber, who gave us an experience report on the Undercover Scrum Master. Dane, well, what does that title really mean?
The Undercover Scrum Master.
Yeah.
Yes, so I became a Scrum Master kind of coming up through the business analysis world, kind of finding a home as a product owner. And then really enjoying being a Scrum Master. But then when working with teams, I really wanted to work on technical practices with them. And so going undercover meant becoming a software developer on an Agile team for 2 years and really trying to experience the various things that as a Scrum Master I had hoped my teams would experiment with and try.
Wearing different hats gives you deeper perspective?
It certainly opened my eyes. As a Scrum Master, I thought I understood my team. I thought I understood their perspectives and motivations and that I empathized with them. And I was still really surprised once I became a software developer how different the experience was than I expected.
So what was your biggest surprise?
The one I closed with, which is how the entire team kind of had taken on the sense that they had to hurry all the time.
Because as Scrum Masters, you ask them, when are they going to be done? How can I help you?
Right. As a Scrum Master, I just wanted to help. I wasn't trying to rush them. I was trying to find out, if you're stuck, how can I help you get unstuck? And when the product owner might push, I would try to defend the team a little bit and ask, do we really need this? Or let's let the team make the decision about how much they can accomplish in a sprint. The sustainable pace really spoke to me as a Scrum Master. I really care about that for my teams.
But why did your help cause that anxiety?
Right. And so then hearing those messages as a developer, it all sounded like I was supposed to hurry and do things faster.
So why do you think that is?
The way that I interpret it is it's very much about where attention is being paid. So the attention is on delivering more. We look at our velocity metrics and we're seeing a quantity, and it's pretty clear zero would be a really bad quantity. Mm-hmm. And so the implication is that a higher velocity is better. And then when we look at cycle times, it's clear that taking a year to get something done is probably bad. We want it to be a much shorter cycle time.
So just you're making people aware of that as a Scrum Master creates that anxiety or that pressure to sprint. Something about the language we use to talk about Scrum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying this because I'm an ancient jogger. Mm-hmm. I used to run, but now I jog. And I can't sprint forever, but just that word sprinting, it implies that too.
Like, right, and you can't sprint forever.
Right. I mean, even the fastest person in the world can only do it for about 100 yards.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So now that you've worn this other hat of a developer, you realized that sometimes you were trying to, as a Scrum Master, you talked about, I was trying to protect the team,
mm-hmm.
but you also realized that Scrum Masters need love and product owners do too, right?
It's true. Yeah, it's true. Can you say a little more about that?
Yeah, because well, I'm going to protect my team from not making estimates and not getting interrupted.
Right.
But in particular, you talked about interruptions and distractions.
Right. And so that was something else that I had noticed before as a Scrum Master that the developers on my team kind of had privileges that weren't extended to others. And it was true for me once I became a developer, too. I didn't earn these things. Just by being announced to the team as a developer, others on the team would be afraid to interrupt me or essentially asked to collaborate with me, which is a really important thing. But because I was a developer, they needed to give me that space that they certainly didn't give me as a Scrum Master. And I know that sometimes this is presented as developers are special and it takes so much time for them to get back into their flow once you interrupt them. And I really disagree with that. And I know that others have really interesting perspectives on that with pair programming, that when you're pairing, in some sense, you're being interrupted constantly by talking to someone, but you are actually focusing on the important work. And okay. I would extend that outside to everyone you work with. We're all working together on this team. We are all contributing in different ways. And so the real answer is to respect everyone's time and contributions.
So have you heard about fast and slow thinking?
Kahneman's
work, I was quite inspired by that and thinking about the different rhythms we have of doing things. And there's sometimes where one might say a programming task appears to be the slow thinking, that it requires concentration and intention, but all other roles require times of slow thinking. And slow means methodical, hard work where when you're distracted, it can cause you to totally lose the trust. Certainly
right.
A product owner trying to understand a customer need may have a deep analysis of something. We all have that in our job.
Absolutely.
So there's these different rhythms. So what's the right balance now that you've been undercover?
So the answer is always, it depends.
Sure.
It depends on your context. But it is true. When addressing certain things, it is a complicated problem, and there are many things to keep in your head and sort out, and you do need kind of that dedicated time. So I guess I would look to a team and the individual members to be somewhat self-organizing and self-aware. Certainly room for coaching them on this, but if it's that sort of problem, maybe my pair and I should go to a room where we won't be interrupted, where people can't find us, to really dive into this thing. But there are other times when we should be available, because there probably are important things to collaborate on that are coming up.
And you might need to collaboratively do some slow thinking together with other people,
right?
Actually.
And some of the serendipitous things that happen with co-located teams, I might be working on something, I'm talking the problem through, engaging in the slow thinking where we really need to focus, but someone else can overhear and step in because they actually have really important contributions. We never invited them to, but by overhearing, they can offer those and
so that sounds much more dynamic than people might expect. It isn't just that we're doing the same thing. This sounds like you have to be open to different rhythms and ways of working.
Yeah, and so you certainly see some of my Scrum Master heart here.
even
having been a developer for 2 years, I still really care about that team and about that collaboration. But I do have that additional appreciation now for the dedicated time. A dedicated time to think through a problem, really focus on something.
But not just only from the developer's point of view.
But for everyone. Everybody. As a Scrum Master, I wanted that time.
Aren't Scrum Masters supposed to just be, ding the bell and help, and then
right.
You go scurry around, right?
Yeah. No, there definitely is that perception of Scrum Masters, that there's no deep thinking required. They're just jumping on the latest impediment or helping out with some administrative task.
And after a while, you're sprinting so much as a Scrum Master. How do you deal with that?
As a Scrum Master?
Yeah.
This is just very personal to myself.
Sure.
I would stay after the team was gone. I would actually work late and to have that time when no one was around to bother me and I could focus.
Work harder. I remember when I was managing a team that we kind of instituted, because everybody was a little bit too responsive and too interrupted,
mm-hmm.
the quiet time for a couple of hours before we started any sort of meeting. Didn't have our stand-up at 8 o'clock. We had it at 10,
mm-hmm.
right? So we had a couple of hours where, people can just sort of figure out what they're doing. Team really liked that for a while.
Yeah, teams I've been on have experimented with really similar things, too. Either team time, sometimes we've called it, where there's some dedicated time where we kind of shut the door. It's just for the team, and we're trying to be quieter and working on these things and less kind of running in and out and talking to various people.
So what are your plans for the future?
I'm really excited about coaching teams again.
Yeah.
But I don't want to lose contact with the code. I really enjoy writing code, reading code, and the activities around that. I've actually been talking to some people after my talk, and just thinking about what is my advice to other Scrum Masters who maybe don't have the luxury of being able to spend a couple years as a developer, who want to understand more about the code that their team's working on. And so I don't have the answer yet, but I know what I'd like to do, which is to just, as a Scrum Master, be involved. I won't take responsibility for writing the code for a story, but I'd like to go and sit with the developers or in a code review, be part of that code review, talking through the work being done by the team.
So it's very interesting you bring this up, because I didn't know what you were going to answer. But long ago, because I've been involved in experience reports for a long time, there's this fellow named Joe Blattner who gave an experience report, probably one of the very first Agile conferences, 2003, 2004, when it was the Agile Development Conference.
Yeah.
And I shepherded him. And he's in the same town that I live in. And his title of his experience report was being a player coach as a manager. And it wasn't a Scrum process, but he was the software manager who was running, helping, blocking his team when they're doing backlog and whatever. So he was manager / Scrum Master, which often happens. And he insisted that he have time to at least code some one thing and look at stuff. And it was very interesting at that time that he thought the value of being a player coach is then I can go represent the team more effectively. When he gave that report, people pushed back, oh, player coaches, that's a bad thing. They'll be bad at both. I'm not so sure. I thought he was onto something because he had that interest, right? you don't want to be irrelevant in a code review, if you're saying. You want to be on your toes. You know, I don't think we should discourage player coaches. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. Right. I think a lot of times the objection is, if you're responsible as a developer on the team, when push comes to shove, you're going to forget about your scrum master or coaching responsibilities and just try to get work done and kind of give into that hurry, you know, more faster mentality.
Right, right. Okay.
And it's, you need to be able to still be the coach who can step back and observe and help the entire team. And I know that's a balance that is a little harder when you are the player coach. But that's certainly what I would love to be able to do, where I'm able to coach the team and still have my hands in the code and understand it.
Well, so what he decided to do is to never be on the critical story that needs to get done.
Yep.
So don't love it too much is the point.
Maybe.
So that was just something I remember from
that's
that.
That's really interesting.
But I remember when that report was out there, it was like people thought, oh, no, you'll just be bad at both things. And I was, no, Joe, you need to write this report because I think it keeps your sanity. Because he had the manager role at that time, and he's just like, no.
I'll have to read that now.
Yeah, it's in the IEEE software archives, but I can certainly dig it out for you.
I would do that.
So you were talking about advice for Scrum Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Any last bits of advice? Better than read your report.
Yeah, well, obviously. Certainly, and have that empathy for the experience of the members of your team. One thing that I think is important is understanding that when your team's not enthusiastic about your suggestions about changes and improvements, that they may just be overwhelmed with all the technology that they're dealing with, everything they have to learn to do their jobs. And so understanding that they may not actually disagree with your proposals, they're just overwhelmed and not able to show that enthusiasm for these ideas. I certainly had that feeling as a Scrum Master where I would propose something and the team just wasn't excited.
They were flat, right?
They were flat. And I thought that meant they hated the idea. And they were just exhausted, and it was hard for them to get excited about another thing to learn.
Maybe they were sprinting too much.
Exactly, yes. And so one of the things I hope for any Scrum Master that has this added empathy and maybe finds ways to look into the code is being able to represent the team on the sustainable pace, the work that's being done, and the value of refactoring, improving the quality of the code, and kind of being an advocate for those kind of stereotypically developer concerns.
So it's interesting, Dane, that you're bringing up some of the original XP practices.
Yeah, those are speaking to me a lot more now.
We should call them out as for what they are, because some people may not know. The extreme programming combined with Scrum maybe it's a good thing to think about that.
Chocolate and peanut butter, it's a good mix.
Great. Well, so thanks a lot for having this conversation, and good luck, you know, in your future hiring and developing this role. I'd like to hear more sometime.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks.